Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Jeff Schwartz, Jason Martin in with you for one more day. Clay will be back on Monday. You can find him on Twitter, though, at Clay Travis. Jeff's at Jeff Schwartz. I'm at JMart Radio. Dub Yarbrough with me here in Nashville. The crew in L.A., I got to say, this is the OG crew from the Jason Martin Show. My original triumvirate of Ryan Bershinger, Chris Perfett, and Brian Finley. That's fantastic. That's taking it way back. A year and a half ago.
Yeah,
I know the show's not that old, but that's still awesome. We'll hear from them coming up a little bit later. Jeff, first off, just let me ask off the top. Back to the Future?
No.
Okay. I knew better, but I just thought I'd... I just thought maybe you'd have some good news for me. We're going to do the July 4th movie.
Please.
Stuff a little bit later on in the show. That's going to be fun because... I just hope you do better than you did on your Memorial Day list. Dub, see if you can find the right list here. Also, all week we've been trying to figure out what we're going to watch in the studio. And for some reason, every morning we're in here, they're running the Baylor-Oklahoma Big 12 championship game like every day. And then they ran, for some reason, Alabama-Arkansas, which was like 1,000-0 in the second quarter. But right now, they're running... Michigan, Ohio State, when Troy Smith was the quarterback. And so this is more like it right here. Like, we can roll with this. This was 2006, and it's a game that ends up being 42-39 for the Big Ten title. Like, there's too much good out there for there to be, here's the Mac Jones era beginning at Alabama on TV. Like, I know this there's a lot of tape.
This was 2005, right? Because I think both teams still were in the top four for the BCS.
Well, it says six on the info, but you could be right. I have it on mute, so we just flipped it on.
I remember because we as an Oregon, I think, got left out of the BCS that year.
That's why you know.
Of this game. I may be wrong on this. No, it was, the game in 2005 was 25-21. We got left out that year. We got left out that year for some reason. I forget what it was. I remember because we were fifth, and we very easily could. Now, we didn't have our quarterback. We probably would have gotten our butts whooped, but we were at least close enough to have an opportunity to play in a BCS bowl. That would have been fun.
Who was the quarterback at Oregon in 05, 06? I remember Harrington, but that was like 01, 02.
Kellen Clemens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were fifth in the country that year, and the reason we got left out of a BCS bowl was it was something like the top four teams had to go, and so they obviously went, and then Notre Dame was like in the top 12, and they got to go to a BCS bowl because they're in the top 12, and so they got to go. It was a wreck, but we actually went to the. Went to the Holiday Bowl, and we ended up losing, but we didn't have a quarterback, so whatevs.
So, in our little chat window before we started, you put in just an ominous sentence, and it's unfortunate, quite frankly, because this show has certainly been more optimistic than basically anybody else in sports media from the outset, but your comment just says, "I'm worried about football."
Yeah, I'm worried for a couple reasons. We could go to the college side first if you want to do that.
Sure.
The Pac-12 commissioner yesterday, Larry Scott, came out and said, we're working through all the options now, which he had not done. I believe very strongly that college football as a whole was on the way to starting on time. Like, it really was. I think people were excited about that being the case. And then now we've had like one state in every conference that is scaring people into why we might not start on time. So like Arizona in the Pac-12, Texas in the Big 12, and then, I mean, obviously the SEC team's there too, and then Florida in the SEC. And so now they're working through different scenarios where, you know, the season is starts late. In that case, you just play conference games, and then also moving the season to the spring, which I think is the spring idea is by far the worst for many reasons. One is that it pushes back the 2021 fall, you know, normal football season. It would push that back probably to October, November, because there's not enough time to, for your bodies to recover to get that in. The NFL said they're not moving their draft, which they shouldn't move their draft. And so I know it's just, I know that Larry Scott is being honest about the possible scenarios. And like July 13th is about the time they have to decide what to do, because remember, they were going to come in July 15th for a ramp up period to kind of get themselves ready for training camp, because that, you know, the issue we talked about yesterday with David Chow and just me and you about, you know, just being kind of physically ready to play.
Right.
And there was talk about the July 15th thing, but you know, it's, and Larry Scott mentioned, like, it's not really about our players that are already on campus. Besides LSU, Clemson, you know, Kansas State, Houston, there's been relatively low testing numbers or low positive numbers amongst college athletes. You look out west, only seven Pac-12 schools are reporting, and most are not reporting on football alone, just kind of overall athletes that are returning. And they have, like, out of seven schools, there were 10 positive tests, right? If you look at yesterday, I think I saw Michigan tested like a ridiculous number of players. Here we go. Brett McMurphy tweeted out, Michigan has tested 322 student athletes and coaches and staff for COVID. Only two have positive tests. Like, we're seeing that outside of a couple of schools, the testing numbers actually show really good results for college athletes and for their staff. Like, they're doing what they have to do. Just a couple schools that kind of have thrown that off. So it's not, this is the what I'm worried about is not like the athletes themselves that are there. It's that some of these campuses might not open on time, and the college presidents and athletic directors have been very firm in this, Jason, saying like, look, if campus is not open, we're not playing football.
Right.
And from the college side, that's what really worries me. I mean, USC has already said they're doing online classes. So the question becomes, Jason, at what level is like open? Like, if USC has, you know, a lab open on campus and has like the student center open on campus and the library open, does that count as like open enough to play football?
Online only courses, Jeff, means NCAA 14 gets played by the team online, where in Twitch streams so everyone can see the video game.
but I also think that, by the way, I mean, look, I'll give Big Cat a shout out, man. Like, that, what he has done with that game and Twitch, I mean, like, the way they're able to create content in a pandemic has been fabulous. I mean, I never thought in my life I'd be watching Big Cat play football every night. It's a little more boring now because he wins all the time, and like he understood, like, figure out how to actually play, not just throw a bunch of picks every night. But bravo to him for figuring out how to provide this content.
I don't even know what you're talking about, but I assume Big Cat's been playing video games on Twitch.
Yes, he plays NCAA 2014.
Okay. It's like his that's a good idea.
It's like his fifth season. He's the number one streamer on Twitch now. Like, it's like incredible. I mean, he gets, like, for the champion, like the BCS game, he gets like over like 150,000 people are watching.
Now, what's hilarious is that, like, people are going to watch the video game more when the championship is on the line. That makes me laugh a little bit.
Well, because, like, you know, he's like Toledo right now.
I used to do that too. I mean, props to Big Cat for doing that, but I mean, back in the day, NCAA football, me and my two roommates, we had a dynasty rolling for years and years and years, and we picked the worst teams in the game and built them into national powers. And we would block off, literally, Jeff, we would block off like 4 or 5 hours for recruiting and for off-season activities, and we would all, like, just clear our schedules. It would be, all right, none of us are working that day. We're going to, you know, grab some beverages, and we're going to sit down that night, and we're just going to hammer this thing out. And recruiting all had to be done with witnesses in the room, because there was a cheating incident, which led to some sanctions for one of my roommates who just... Two of us went to the gym, and then we come back and, oh, really? So you've been able to get... Like, it was crazy. So I get that. And if you... It's not cool to, like, play NCAA and go pick, I don't know, whatever you want to pick, Clemson right now. I get it if you're a Clemson fan, but if you're going to run a – even if I was running a dynasty, I wouldn't pick Clemson. And I would go take that job when they fell completely off the map, which is what happens. Like Ohio State ends up being the worst team in the game 10 or 15 years in because you've destroyed their program with your recruiting.
Yeah, so he started as the OC of Toledo. Then he went to the OC at USC, the head coach at Tennessee, and then he went to Toledo. So he won a title at Tennessee, then went to Toledo and won a title. So I think that's how his... So I don't know how we got sidetracked, but it's
I won three straight national championships at Appalachian State.
There you go.
And then went to Western Kentucky. And this was before I ended up moving to Bowling Green and attending Western Kentucky. Like, there were always these jokes that we would pay attention to what the schools were doing in real life. So I would just always say, yeah, you know, I'm pretty proud of the boys, pretty proud of what they're doing up there. They're keeping things rolling and all this kind of stuff. And I ended up visiting Bowling Green to see my parents and then end up going to WKU. And the joke, of course, from my friends was, what was the contract deal? Like, I wasn't going to school, I was going to coach. Everything. Sometimes you got to find ways to have fun in life, Jeff.
Yeah, you do, and right now Big Cat is doing that, and I've enjoyed watching.
That's a good idea. That's a really, really smart idea. So you're worried about football, and again, I told you yesterday, what are we going to end up talking about today? What's going to break? And it's just more negativity, Jeff. It's like everything's just limiting this or changing this. And we talked 2 days ago as it related to the NBA. What was going to happen here? What was too much? When does the bubble burst? When do things happen? Because the Nuggets shut down their facility because of two positive tests. And guess what's happened now?
The Clippers did.
Yeah. Yes. Like this Clippers whole thing. I think Dan Patrick said it's a house of cards. He feels like all of sports is a house of cards this fall. That's a pretty good description of it, quite frankly. Because it's almost like if one thing goes wrong, then there's going to be the plausible excuse to do whatever to, I think, overreact to everything.
I mean, the thing about it is, you know, and I refer back to like what David Chow said yesterday because he's a doctor, and I would hope that he and I feel like he's he knows what we're talking about when it comes to stuff. You know, he mentioned, you know, he said he made sure to mention novel coronavirus, right? And like the thing about it is that things keep changing very quickly with what we know about it, what we don't know about it. I mean, we're seeing closures in states that are very red, which early on we saw closures in states that were very blue. So it really hasn't discriminated, you know, by the state. And I just think people don't know the best way to proceed. And as far as just sticking to sports, you know, in the NBA, you know, I saw the article about the Clippers closing their facility. I felt like they were closing it just to make sure they could travel to Orlando. Like the article kind of made it seem like, hey, we're just kind of making sure no one else gets sick before we leave. I think like it wasn't like we're closing it and not going to Orlando. It was like, let's just close it. Let's
clean
up. They're
saying they may have it open Wednesday.
And yeah. And like, kind of like get going again to Orlando. So I think the NBA is going to make it work because of the money they put into it, and everything's already set up in Orlando. And look, the bubble idea, I understand that. I get it, and what they're trying to do. And I think it does go off. I really do. I get back to the money here, Jason. And, you know, we talk about opening the economy, and that's money, right? And lives. And sports are the same way. I know it's more money, but it's money nonetheless. And there's incentives for this to come back, especially in the NBA and baseball. But, you know, specifically the football. Look, I mean, college football, the budget is, you know, 80 to 85% of the athletic budget is through college football.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, and that covers, obviously, all your sports, right? It covers all your Olympic sports, covers some of basketball. And we're already seeing, you know, athletic departments shutter sports. Boise State shut down, I think, three sports the other day. We've seen Cincinnati kill some sports. I think some smaller schools in Michigan have killed some sports. And I don't want to see that happen, right? I hope every sport stays afloat, and that will be with football. And there's no amount of loan. There's no amount of, like, there's no just money sitting around that will save all these sports. Like, there's no... I mean, I know there's
especially
endowments,
not at smaller schools,
right? Like, I know there's endowments, and yeah, you can maybe pull money from those and figure out a way to take loans out. I mean, yeah, there's ways to do it, but I think we are also we overestimate how much money these athletic departments and these schools have. I mean, for example, like UCLA, like a premier school in this country, is in. Their athletic department is in financial ruin right now. They are so in debt. Like they took a loan from the school to try to get out of their debt on the athletics. Like there's not as much money as we believe there is. And if football doesn't get played, it's a problem. And maybe the answer is the shortened season. But again, I think, like, okay, what's the difference between now and September? Like, we're not
exactly
I just think that we've gone to a point now where we're really not going back in the other direction. We might be able to, through closures of bars, and sorry to the one person who called yesterday on that, bars and, you know, nightclubs and movie theaters, and I saw bowling alleys or wherever, somewhere closed. Like, maybe we kind of like steady the curve. I don't think we're ever going to flatten it, but we just kind of like boom, we kind of just make it straight line, right? And that's enough, you know, to play sports. But we're not ever flattening it, and that's not never going to happen again. So we kind of have to get over that idea of that happening to play sports. Maybe we just do enough to get it to straight line, and we get back to playing sports.
I mean, you're not going to flatten. Yeah. I mean, we were never supposed to flatten under the curve anyway. It's not like we were going to eliminate under the curve. We were just trying not to overwhelm the hospital system. That's what we were told, and that made sense for a few weeks in particular, especially when we didn't have all the information that we have now. The guy that called yesterday, I understand his sentiment, and I don't agree with orders being put down to shut things down. I feel like if you have a business, if you want to open that business, you should open that business. That doesn't mean that I'm going to go to that business right now if it's a small bar inside, but I don't like forced closures. But the argument about athletic department budgets. Yeah, I was talking to a couple people in that have worked around or been covering some of these smaller universities in Conference USA.
Yeah.
And they've made it clear. They're worried about the future of their entire athletics program because of the lack of football.
Yeah.
Because of what would happen if football didn't happen. And I remember this was a couple months ago, we were having this discussion, and it was a lot more, we don't know what's going to happen in the fall at that point in time. And now we're sitting here on July the 3rd, and we're still having the same kind of conversation. But I made that Starbucks analogy a couple of days ago where franchisees don't have nearly as much money as you would think when it takes you 30 minutes to get your drink because there's people all standing there and it seems like there's just constant motion and it's always busy. Sometimes it looks like it's, I mean, there are some universities that are rolling in dough, but a lot of colleges around the country are the absolute opposite. And That's an overarching fear. There's no question about it. That's something that we're going to have to watch. We just don't know exactly how bad that's going to be. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and then we'll move into the NFL discussion as well and talk about some of the things that we're hearing there. First, it was limiting preseason. Now it's limiting people that might be in camps. There's still just a lot of uncertainty here. We're going to try to cut through the clutter, bring you the facts, not bring you the feelings. That's what we do here. We'll be right back. It's Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hour number two of the program, Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Clay's back on Monday. Jeff Schwartz, Jason Martin, in with you for one more day. We've had a lot of fun this week, even though a lot of the topics have, well, unfortunately been about whether or not sports are going to be played again. Still, hopefully, we will have them, and we are still more optimistic, I think, than most, or at least most that you can find in sports media. I want to talk about Cam Newton's contract a little bit with you, Jeff, because of, and I don't know that this would have been anything to really discuss until Richard Sherman weighed in, and he says on a tweet, how many former league MVPs have had to sign for the men? asking for a friend, men meaning minimum. Just ridiculous. A transcendent talent and less talented quarterbacks are getting $15 to $16 million a year. Disgusting. Here's my take on this, and then I'll get your thoughts here. How many former league MVPs have had to sign for the men? I mean, I don't know. If I went to go grab Peyton Manning right now, I don't think I'd probably pay him $30 million to be the quarterback. Yes. But I know that's a different argument. But the thing is, today ain't yesterday. This whole deal, I mean, how many teams were beating down the door to get Cam Newton? Reportedly, maybe one other one was kicking the tires on it, but it wasn't like there was a huge market here for Cam Newton. Cam's response to this on Instagram was that this is about respect. It's not about money. He's getting a base salary of $1.05 million. That's minimum of his experience. And he can get 6.45 in incentives and per-game roster bonuses. This is a prove-it year for Cam Newton. Whether or not you think that should be the case, it probably should be the case because of the health concerns and all that. They're doing a low-risk deal here, and Cam Newton knows. He said it's about respect. Right now, it's about respect. He wants to go out there and prove it. He wants to show what he's capable of. He wants to show that his body has recovered. And then he's going to get paid. If he goes out there and balls this year, he's going to get paid. But there's no reason to pay him millions and millions when the market didn't exist, Richard. Like, I get it. Yes, he's a former league MVP. He's a former league MVP. He's not the reigning MVP. He's not a year removed from being the MVP. The guy that was in the Super Bowl, we haven't seen that guy in a while, Jeff. We saw him for maybe half of a season in 2018. Then his body betrayed him again. And since that point, we were having discussions not about whether or not he was going to have the highest salary in the league, but whether or not he was going to have a salary in the league.
I understand the angst here, right? Because we see other players that are not as good making a lot more money than him, but this has to do with availability, right? And we know that players that often get injured just don't get the contract that they think they deserve. And this has to do with leverage too. Think about this. You know, Cam Newton wanted to start, and I agree, he's a starter in the NFL when he's healthy. And assuming that he's healthy, he will start and he'll earn all his money and he'll earn even more to his point next year. He's already made $100 million in his career, too. So he'll get another contract if he plays well. And that's the way he's looking at this. Investment in him, and that investment in him will pay off with a big contract in 2021. But the Patriots here had all the leverage, right? So Cam wants to start. Even before free agency, Jason, look at the places that he had that needed quarterbacks, right? Let's say that Tampa Bay needed a quarterback, but they signed Tom Brady. You could have argued that Tennessee was looking at a quarterback, but then they signed to Ryan Tannehill, so they're off the market. You're looking at the Chargers, they have Tyrod Taylor, but they wanted to draft a guy, so they drafted Justin Herbert. Dolphins drafted a guy. We knew they were going to draft a quarterback, and the Bengals drafted a quarterback. I mean, where else? You're looking at Jacksonville and New England, right? And the Chargers, like the three, even after the draft. Jacksonville, New England, the Chargers are the three places Cam could possibly go and be a starter, right? Jacksonville seems all in on Gardner Minshew, which I think is a fault.
Yeah, I don't know that that's going to work out, but they're going to give him another year to try and prove that they're right or wrong there.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it would have worked. It will work, I should say. The Chargers drafted Justin Herbert, and Tyrod Taylor is a capable star in the NFL. I mean, he's not going to win you a Super Bowl.
They're not coming to win the Super Bowl this year anyway. They just want to develop Justin Herbert, and Tyrod Taylor's always been known to be a guy that you can learn from. He's a good veteran guy who's good in the locker room, and I bet you he will do all the mentoring necessary. And Justin Herbert, you know this better than anybody, Jeff. Justin Herbert is classy, and he is smart. And he is probably somebody that's not going to go in there with a gigantic ego and wreck shop. He's actually going to sit there and try to learn from Tyrod Taylor.
Correct. And so it makes sense there. And I do think that there is a possibility that, you know, let's say Tyrod were to get hurt in training camp, that they would have signed Cam Newton. Okay. I mean, that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. So New England knew that, hey, man, you want to start, we're one of the only places where you can start. And they gave him a deal that, you know, that kind of is equivalent to like, hey man, just like come in and try to get a job, and then we have a very incentive, you know, laden deal for a guy who's been injured now for almost a year and a half. So I get it. It's not really It doesn't look fair when you add up what everyone else is making. I mean, everyone points to Chase Daniel making all, well, good for Chase. I mean, like, they get what you can get. You should have to bash Chase to make a point about Cam not getting enough money, but it's all leverage, man. And Cam didn't really have it. Plus, I don't think he, to your point about what he posted, what he said, he's made $100 million. I'm not sure that the money for one season this year is as important to him as making sure he can get another contract after the season. And I think New England, we've seen increasingly, has been a place where you can have a one-year deal and that can explode you into a much longer contract the following year.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it and I just think he's 31 years old right now. He goes out there and balls, he's going to get a deal. And I think in his head, he's just like, look, I know where I was some years ago. I know how people saw me then. I know that that is not the case right now, so I'm going to go to the Patriots, and I'm going to play, and I'm sure he's betting on himself, and he's looking, I would say, at his age at one more deal, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years after this with somebody, and that's probably about it. Then he rides off into the sunset around 35. I don't know. Maybe he plays longer than that. His body, I still fear his body, but just like anybody else that was going to sign him, that has to be taken into consideration. So, yeah, he's a former NFL MVP, but he's a former NFL MVP 5 years removed. Like, you can't – that statement just – Sherman's a very thoughtful guy a lot of times, and he says a lot of smart things and a lot of thought-provoking things. I disagree with him sometimes. I disagree with him here just because I don't think that you can't look at this in a vacuum. There are a lot of other circumstances surrounding this that make it make sense. And yeah, it has to be incentive-laden because the question is just how much of Cam Newton is left? How much of Cam Newton is left for him? How much can we get out of Cam Newton? So we're going to say, look, you can make $6.5 million if you just go out there and just wreck shop for us. If you go out there and you're the Cam Newton of old, the guy that we're hoping you are, then we're going to find a way to compensate you for that. The other thing was, it was pretty tight for the Patriots money-wise anyway. It's not like they had a ton of money to throw around. That's one of the reasons why this situation worked out for them, worked out for both parties.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you could find ways to get money. I mean, they could sign Joe Thuney, their left guard, to a long-term deal and get him off the franchise tag. I mean, there's ways to, if they want to get around it, they could. But yes, I think they have I saw yesterday, they spend the lowest amount on quarterbacks in their room. I think they still owe Tom Brady money.
Yeah.
But
they got a dead cap charge for Tom Brady of $13.5 million.
But in general, though, they have like the lowest spending of quarterbacks actually in their room, which is quite a change, obviously, from the previous year. So the upside here is all for the Patriots, and it's for Cam. Cam plays well. He gets a long-term deal next year. Cam doesn't. The Patriots aren't out a lot of money, and Cam will – I mean, I don't know. If he gets hurt again, I don't know if his career can withstand getting hurt one more time.
No, I don't either. Especially if it's anything that takes him out for a couple of months – and we've talked about, you mentioned it earlier this week, and we were talking about Andrew Luck, and we've talked about him several times since he retired, just the wear and tear on your psyche that comes with rehab as a career. Like, when rehab becomes your career and not the sport that you're playing, then all of a sudden you start to weigh options as to, man, I've made a decent amount of money right here. I'm sure Cam Newton strikes me as somebody that he could end up in media and do a good job if he wanted to, has a kind of outsized personality, and if winning is taken away in terms of that, then maybe there's not that deal where he gets down on himself. He could end up being very good in that role. He could also do some community work.
Yeah,
we've seen him successful there. He's done some great work in Charlotte, and maybe that's the pathway he wants to go, but he's got other things that he can do that don't involve him having to rehab to death, just rehab constantly over and over again. I haven't really had to experience that in my life, but you know, you as someone who has, Jeff, it wears on you, and when you've made that much money, it's like, man, I can do something else and sit on the on the couch and watch Netflix and just watch games on Sunday, maybe coach.
And I thought there was a chance that he would retire, because you know, you mentioned the grind of rehab, and that's what it is. It's a mental grind. Every day, you know, your body is not responding the way you thought it would. The rehab is just not going in the direction you thought. I mean, you make very small strides at times. And he talked about this in one of his, is the right word, a video blog. I hate that word. But he talked about just the mental grind of having to do that every single day. And I did that for almost 2 years straight. I mean, it's exhausting to come in every day and try to work on your body. And like I said, it doesn't respond the way you want it to, you know, you're in pain. And I thought he would follow the Andrew Luck route and just be done because of having to rehab. And obviously he feels good enough to make one more run at it. But if he gets hurt in like a training camp, is out for the year, I mean, he's done. Like, I just think mentally he's probably fried at that point.
Yeah. And I don't know how many people could blame him. At that point in time, when you look back and you think about Liz Frank and you think about a fractured back, but even back in dating back to 2014, I mean, his body has taken just a huge beating. If he has a major setback again, that Andrew Luck situation is going to speak to him even more maybe than it has before. And when Andrew Luck retired, a lot of us said, hey, Cam could be next. Like, Cam could be somebody. Like, once Cam was done for the year, once you saw it, was it a Monday night game? Was that the last game he played?
I think it was Thursday night.
It was Thursday night. That was, I have never seen somebody that looked less happy.
Well, of course.
To be on a football field doing something that I still think he loves than that. And it was just, I can't even imagine how he felt physically at that point in time.
Well, he felt awful. That's why he was, I mean, he hurt his foot in the preseason, tried to play through it, couldn't do it. And he's a guy that uses his legs, obviously. It's not, I don't think, going to be as big a part of his game in New England, but obviously it's still a huge part of who he is as a quarterback. And, you know, not being able to do that is crippling for him. Even just his psyche. It's not, I don't know if it's just crippling to his game, but just his psyche, being able to run and making plays with his legs fires him up as a quarterback. It makes him a better overall player. And to not have that ability really, I think, hurts him as just an overall player. That's what happened last year.
Yeah, that's right. The one difference between the way Luck's rehab went, it seemed like, and Cam's is, the stories that you were hearing out of Indianapolis were just so baffling. It's just like, is it getting better or is it getting worse? Because it was all so mysterious and he's not even been able to pick up a regulation football and throw it and all of this. And then you would see him throwing a little bit and then, well, they're not throwing anymore. Not, like, that wasn't really the case with Cam. I mean, Cam just kind of went away. But once we started seeing these workout videos and all that over this last stretch of months, it's been pretty much full steam ahead in terms of, you haven't heard a lot of negativity. It's been a lot more positive from outside sources that are looking. Even David Chow, Dr. Chow, who we had on yesterday, he's put out several comments saying he's very optimistic about Cam's health.
Well, remember last year there was that, you know, after about 4 weeks, it was like, will he play, will he won't play? Kyle Allen's doing a good job.
Yeah.
Are they purposely not playing Cam because, you know, because Kyle's doing a good job? And it did feel a little bit like that, but obviously his foot just took longer to recover. And that is a tough injury, a Liz Frank, to kind of, you know, to kind of deal with, because you're, it's like when you plant your foot, it like kind of splices. It doesn't like hold into the ground. And there really is no, rehab other than rest. I mean, they could put a pin in there to kind of help your tendons stay together, but there's not like, it's not like there's a
it's not a catch-all cure. There's no vaccine for it.
I mean, but it's not like you broke your leg and you just put a plate in your leg, which I've had happen to me, and then, you know, 6 weeks later it's healed. So that's the concern, but I think you're right. I think he's healthy now, and I'm excited to watch him play for the Patriots. It's gonna be fun to watch.
It's definitely going to be fun to watch. I'm curious to know how many July 4th films Jeff feels were fun to watch. We're going to go through a list. Dub found the list for us. We're going to come back. We're going to find out just how depraved the Jeff Schwartz movie catalog actually is. This is a man that has not seen Back to the Future. It is 2020. We've been in a pandemic for months, and we still haven't been able to get this job done. It's a sad state of affairs right now, but we'll have a lot of fun. We'll be right back. It's Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back. Outkick the coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Jason Martin, Jeff Schwartz in. Clay Travis back on Monday. We've had fun all week. Just ran through a list of films released on July 4th weekend. Not going to be any of those this year. At least not in theaters, as we continue to navigate whatever this year is. I think it's kind of the actual depiction of the everything is fine meme. That's kind of what 2020 has been. Right now on TV, UCLA USC from 2008, when USC was number 5 in the country.
The Bruins upset him, right? It wasn't like he had, like,
I believe
it was like,
so.
It was like 13-9. It was like a weird score.
Brian Finley right now is like frantically rushing to find ESPNU and get it on the screen.
It's like some really weird score.
Yeah, it was an odd game, I do remember. But I remember there's a ton of pro talent on this field as well, I believe.
Yeah, it was this is 2007, this would have been.
Well, it says 8 on the somehow, like, you've said it's a different year both times with the info says 2008. Mark Sanchez.
I don't think USC lost that game. 2006, I think, was the year they were upset. But USC won 28-7. This is not the game that you're... There's no upset here.
Well, if it's 28-7, then why are we watching this? Is this the one that you picked? You should have watched the one in 2006. All right. So
yeah, 2006, UCLA won 13-9. They beat number 2 USC. That's the year it was. That's why I was like, why is 2008 on? That wasn't the year.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. To go back to my childhood, yes.
Yeah, no, I know. I gotcha. Understood. So yesterday we were looking at the AFC quarterbacks, and once you got past 4, we talked about it's better to rank in terms of tiers,
yes,
than it is like 1-30 or 1-32 and all of that, and start to look at everything else. But the NFC, there's just so much more depth. Doesn't mean that there's not a couple guys that you'd rather not have on your team, but there is a lot more depth in the NFC. The AFC list, I don't think, is all that hard, really, because you're parsing mediocrity real quick. When you look at, I'm just going to list the guys quickly, and then we can go back and actually discuss them here. It goes east, north, southwest in the list that I have. Dak Prescott, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, Dwayne Haskins, Mitch Trubisky, Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, Matt Ryan, Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Kyler Murray, Jared Goff, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Russell Wilson. And I'll say from the start, I think that if you were going number one, the last guy I mentioned is number one.
Russell Wilson is number one. That is correct.
Yep.
And that's not a hard number one either. He is somehow still underrated in the NFL. I don't understand it. He plays in an offense that's not designed for his strengths. It's so silly. I don't know how he has not gotten an MVP vote before. He probably will never, because he doesn't pass enough. The offense is not built around him.
He's used as a decoy. Like, it's more so than he would. He could be a weapon in many places. I remember reading a Robert Mays piece. I think it was Robert Mays. Maybe it was Kevin Clark. A couple of years ago, where they were basically saying that one of the reasons that they... Or no, I guess it would have been this offseason, because it was after they drafted DK Metcalf, and they were just like... Well, they bring in Metcalf, and Metcalf's going to be another guy that could be a decoy down the field, but the ultimate decoy is Russell Wilson, because they're paying him a ton of money, but they're going to run the football, because that's what Pete Carroll's conservatism does. That's what Schottenheimer does also.
It's always like Wilson's like, just save. It's always like, save us, buddy. Like, fourth quarter. That's why he's in the fourth quarter. He always plays frenetic, and he plays so well, is because it's like, Russell Wilson, come save us, man. Like, we're not doing, you know, we're down. Come save us. So Wilson to me is easily number one.
Number two, I assume, like, there's a couple guys that you could maybe go with here, but I would say you're probably looking at Rodgers, Breeze, Ryan, Brady. Those are probably the four that might stand out.
I went with Breeze here.
Yeah, I that's where I would have gone as well. And then maybe you go Rodgers.
His accuracy is, yeah, I put Rodgers 3. I think Rodgers is on the down, but I think three is still just the talent he has still puts him at 3.
Matt Ryan 4, or would you go Carson Wentz 4, or would you go Brady 4?
I went Brady 4.
Okay, Brady 4, I, yeah, maybe so. Ryan 5?
I went Wentz 5.
Okay.
I'm.
I need to see a little bit more from Carson Wentz this year.
I mean, this is a question of like, is this like talent? I mean, yeah, I went Wentz 4. I mean, I'd be okay with putting Ryan up at 4, at 5, I should say, but I have Ryan a little lower.
Okay, Stafford and Cousins are probably.
I have Dak next
on list. You have Dak above Stafford. Okay. I think Dak is probably right around. I think we're getting to where Dak makes sense, but I might still go Stafford just because I know what level of talent Stafford has. He's never had all that much around him.
Correct, but he also, I don't know, he's a little consistent. But yeah, I would, I got to put Matt Ryan higher, I think, looking at my list.
Him above Brady now?
If not, then
you've got him where he probably should be.
I'm going to put Brady. I'm going to keep Brady where he is at 4, and then I'm going to have
Ryan should Wentz. Be above Carson Wentz, I think. I mean, you can make arguments either way, but Wentz still has to prove a little bit more to me in games that matter. He played well last year, and the team at times let him down. I feel a little bit more confident in Matt Ryan.
I mean, the Wentz thing is the injuries, right? I mean, otherwise, I think you'd feel much better about him. I mean, he's had no wide receivers for the last 2 years.
Correct.
The injury thing is I still like Wentz a lot. Wentz is the one that's the injury. But let's go. So after Matt Ryan, who I have here is 7, I have Stafford 8, I have Cousins 9, mm-hmm. and I have Jimmy G 10. I could very much make a case for Kyler Murray at 10.
I was going to say Kyler Murray at 10 just because of the upside. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is the very definition of average. That's just my personal opinion. It's not that you can't win with him, but I don't think he's generally going to be the reason that you win. The reason Kansas City won the championship and San Francisco didn't is because Patrick Mahomes played on one of those rosters. I don't think you're ever going to look at San Francisco and say, well, Jimmy G makes this a no-brainer for San Francisco. He just doesn't jump off the page to me that way. He's probably not going to he's not going to lose you games, although he's going to make a couple of questionable decisions, but I kind of see him in that, I don't know, 15 to 17 range in the NFL overall in quarterbacks.
Yeah. So Wilson, Breeze, Rodgers, Brady, Wentz. I moved Ryan to 6 above Dak, then Stafford, Cousins, Jimmy G. With Kyler Murray, I think the caveat is Kyler Murray could easily just like pop up really fast.
Yeah, this could be a year where, you know, in his second year, he might become a real household name. Because they are going to be fun to watch. We were talking about if you had a chance to just watch 5 teams and everything they did, and the NFL didn't have the same access that it does now with Sunday Ticket, the Cardinals might be one of those 5 just because Kyler Murray and that offense are going to be so much fun to watch.
I do think that there's a chance that he springs up really fast.
After whether or not you have Murray or Garoppolo, now you're looking at, here's who's left. Goff, Bridgewater, Trubisky, Haskins, Daniel Jones. I think that's everybody.
I'm debating whether to put like an arrow down for Rodgers, like a stock down for Rodgers on my little list here.
Well, I mean, I think his stock has been dropping for about 2 years. I think that last year the Packers' success was largely because of Aaron Jones and the defense. It was not nearly as much about Rodgers tearing it up the way that he has in the past. And the fact, I just think it's going to recede a little bit more. It just seems like we've seen the best out of Aaron Rodgers. Doesn't mean he still can't win at the highest level. It just means the Aaron Rodgers that was like, he's the greatest that's ever picked up a football, that Aaron Rodgers is nowhere to be found anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you there.
So when you're looking at some of these guys, and I mean, now we've gotten to the real, okay, well, take it or leave it kind of situation.
Yeah.
I guess with what is left, I might want to see, like, I think Bridgewater has a chance to end up you having a more positive feeling about him than maybe you do about Jared Goff.
I think they're about the same. I feel like they're about the same player.
Yeah. And then outside of that, I don't know what Haskins is going to be.
Right.
Daniel Jones, we saw some good. We saw some not so good. Trubisky, I just don't think has it.
I don't think he does either.
Do you think he's dead last?
I just think we don't know about Daniel Jones enough yet. We don't know about Haskins enough yet. I mean, Trubisky dead last in the NFC. I mean, I feel a little more comfortable putting him ahead of Daniel Jones and Haskins right now.
Well, I mean, Nick Foles is his backup.
We just don't know, right?
No, you don't. I mean, but still, though, the quarterback play in the NFC, when you look at this list, and like, we didn't go top to bottom, I don't think, in the AFC yesterday. But when you think about Allen, Fitzpatrick, or Tua, but Fitzpatrick's list is a starter right now. Cam, Sam Darnold, Lamar Jackson. Then you got Burrow, who we'll have to see. Mayfield, who better have a good year for his sake. Roethlisberger at the end of his career. Watson, who's a stud. Rivers at the very end of his career. Minshew, who I don't think either one of us think is a long-term solution. Tannehill, who, well, we've discussed it. Drew Lock, who we haven't seen enough of yet. Mahomes, stud. Derek Carr. Yeah, Mariota behind him, Tyrod Taylor, and that's it. That's your AFC.
Yeah, it's not terribly great right now. There's a lot of young talent, right? Tua and Burrow and
maybe
Herbert.
Justin Herbert. Yeah,
there's less of that young unknown talent in the NFC. It's kind of more established quarterbacks.
Yeah, which means, I mean, you just hope that they draft well, because eventually there's going to be a lot of these teams that we're going to be seeing new names on. Because a lot of these guys got to be getting towards the end of the line, or at least maybe making moves or receding to some degree. So it does feel like it's more of it's like the incumbent NFC with a couple of upstarts. And then the AFC is just a whole lot of exciting young guys. And then some just, we've probably seen enough to know this is not going to work.
Yeah. There are some guys in the AFC that kind of have, like, make it or break it. Like, Derek Carr has a make it or break it year.
Mayfield probably does.
Mayfield does as well. With
Darnold might.
Darnold probably, because Gase is probably gone after this year if they don't win.
Josh Allen.
Yeah, he's probably entrenched there for a little bit. I mean, he made the playoffs this year at least. He's entrenched there. I believe that. So, I think those are probably the make it or break it guys.
I mean, it's amazing Baker Mayfield goes to make it or break it a year. And we kind of predicted that it wasn't going to go well in Cleveland before last year. Both of us basically said the exact same thing. I didn't know Mayfield was going to be in a situation where I think the general perception around him right now is as negative as it seems to be. Now, that means the bar's kind of low, maybe. So he can just go in and not do some of the things he was doing last year and talk a little bit less. And maybe they're going to be better off. But again, the constant problem for Cleveland is here's the, you know, turnstile of head coaches. So here's another one coming in, and we've got to see what this is going to be. Last year, that was not a good hire.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of my Baker Mayfield position last year was I didn't think Freddie Kitchens was any good as a coach, and we were putting too much on him. And that, you know, the NFL has a really incredible way of humbling you, right? Like, if you think you've arrived, and I have, every player has a story like that. Like, we all, like, there was a game, I remember 2010, where I was going against, like, an undrafted free agent, and not that I was some stud back then, but, like, we were, you know, we were all joking about how, you know, the guy over Jordan Gross, the left tackle, Jordan had a tough day, and Jeff Schwartz had an easy day, and then I had, like, my worst game of my career. Like, humbling. I thought Baker Mayfield last year was way too out there. Too many interviews, too many endorsements. I don't really think he should turn down endorsements, but there were like too many, oh my God, look how good Baker's going to be profile pieces. I thought that was ridiculous. And so
he put a target on him too, didn't it?
He played like 10 games as a rookie, and he played terribly against good teams. So I just think that you have to, as a young player, kind of temper that. And then, you know, when last year and he imploded a little bit. But I think Stefanski's offense really fits him well, and I think he'll be much better this year.
I feel like you're right. I think they're going to be a fascinating watch, because it's just going to be a study on some guys. and Stefanski hopefully will give them a better chance in that offense to do what you would anticipate them doing, or at least being able to live up closer to their potential. The thing is, you're right. It was like Baker Mayfield was a star before he was actually a star. And then that star kind of faded, and you realized, well, maybe that star didn't exist to begin with. Maybe that was actually, it's like you think you saw a UFO, but you were actually just seeing like some spotlight from the distance. That's kind of what it was. It's like, oh, that wasn't a UFO after all. This year we have to find out whether or not the UFO was actually in the sky. Of course, the Pentagon says, yes, UFOs. Another thing in 2020, can you imagine that? That actually was said, and it just kind of didn't even get talked about at all because of everything else that's going on.
Crazy,
2020,
right?
Man. 2020.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.